was made to help a child. I don't remember it being this hard.
Woody, somebody's whispering in your ear. Everything's gonna be okay.
What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castles.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. Come on in. It is the Mouse and Castle. Appropriate, finally, that we have turned 21. It's our 21st episode. So you can finally come in and drink, have a drink here at the Mouse and Castle. Welcome.
Look at me without a drink in hand.
I don't either. This is like...
I didn't know it was our 21st birthday. I haven't been keeping up.
I know. I came unprepared too. Oh well, we'll make up for it next week. Hey, that's Aaron Goins. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Riley. This is true. This is Aaron Goins.
It's the one and only. Hey, man. Well, we're here to talk some Disney, specifically this week. Toy Story 4. I literally just saw it. Wasn't able to see it opening weekend, but I'm fresh out of the theater. A nice Monday night screening with the girlfriend. Which was a lesson learned from when we saw Dumbo on a Saturday night the weekend it opened, with about 35 screaming kids in the theater. So this time we watched it like on a nice Monday night. There was like 7 other people in the theater. It was fantastic.
I went on, did I go on Friday night or Saturday? I can't remember now, but I went one of those 2 days, and there I went with, like, knowing what I was getting into, because I went with a friend who has a ton of kids.
Oh, yeah?
And so it was, like, my son and then their 4 boys.
Oh, boy.
And then another friend who brought her boy. I knew what I was getting into, but, yeah, it was just a row of laughing children the entire time, which I didn't mind. It was actually kind of added to the ambiance of the Toy Story vibe.
Well, the biggest thing laughing. I know, because there were the people who were there were a couple families, but all the biggest laugh lines were from the previews, which the previews for animated movies suck. Let's be honest. Like, all, especially the non-Disney ones.
Why?
Like, can we talk about Adam's Family for a second?
No, wrong podcast.
There's literally so many fart jokes. I mean, they were popular with the kids. But that's the other thing about animated movies that aren't Disney. Disney does it right. Like the new Frozen 2 trailer, nothing's revealed. You don't know. They're going off on an adventure trying to discover the secrets of her family. That's the trailer. If you watch the trailer to the new Trolls movie, they give you acts A, B, and C, including the finale, basically the entire plot summary. And I guess the operating theory is that it's kids and they like kind of like to experience the movie twice, or like they're not really going to get or remember the story as much. But this is not the Trolls podcast. Sorry, we're keeping it to Disney. So we are going to do a Toy Story 4 review, although I did just watch 2 and 3. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about Galaxy's Edge, because I've got one Galaxy's Edge story to talk about. And if we get to it, there's been some updates on the Little Mermaid live-action film. So let's get straight into it. Toy Story 4. Now, I didn't realize how far apart these movies have been released. But it's to the point where each generation of kids is going to have their own Toy Story movie. Because the first one came out in, what, 99? Second one in the early 2000s.
Wasn't the first one in 95?
Was it 95? My gosh.
I think so.
I'm usually pretty good with movie dates.
Check me on Google. I was just having a conversation with my friend Tim Bjorgen today, who is a humongous Disney fan and who's a bit of a savant when it comes to knowing like movie release dates.
Yeah.
And he was talking about Toy Story movies with me.
By the way, you're right. You win. 95.
I was admitting to him I had not seen Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 in a long time. So he was kind of like, yeah, he was kind of dropping those release dates on me, which I was like, 95? Holy cow. Like, it's 2019. That's like, were you even born in 1995, Riley?
Yes. I was like 3 years old. Well, 4 years old.
So there's no way you even remember that movie coming out.
No. Well, I never saw the Toy Story movies until like end of high school. I sat down. We were visiting our good friend Steve Glosson. And he's like, you never watched these? And so we watched my sister Bethany watched the first one. But I'd never gotten around to the second or third one, which I love the Pixar films. And I'd seen a lot of the ones that had come out like post like 2004, 2005 and beyond. Like Finding Nemo Beyond is kind of where I started picking up all the Pixar films. Now, if you guys could see Aaron, he's rolling his eyes at me right now so hard.
I wouldn't call it an eye roll. It was just like a look of concern.
Although I do remember A Bug's Life coming out, that being a big deal.
I mean, to put it into perspective, Toy Story came out when I was 15.
Wow.
When Toy Story came out, and I'm almost 40. I'm 39. Yeah. So just to think about that, and I just rewatched Toy Story 1 the other day because I wanted to get a little bit more insight into the character of Bo Peep, because I was thinking, okay, I just watched Toy Story 4 and she was like the central character. In some ways, I would say she was the secondary character in the movie behind only Woody.
Yeah.
Which, you know, supplanted a couple other characters who had been a bit more established. So I was thinking, okay, like Bo Peep, she must have been a big deal in these other movies. I just missed out on it. And I went back and watched Toy Story 1 and she literally had like 3 lines. And basically her whole role in that movie is just flirting with Woody. And so I was just like, oh, they really, really, you know, gave her a different role or different, I guess they really decided to make her a little bit more central.
They kind of make her a badass a little bit. Like, that's the thing is she serves as the sort of, the crux of the plot. Like the turning point of the film is centered around Bo Peep and the idea of the lost toy concept.
I mean, they definitely made some adjustments to the character, even in the, like, cause she had adjusted her outfit to look a little bit more, you know.
She's basically the samurai badass with the staff that she uses for combat. It was pretty cool. But well, here's the thing about Toys. I guess I should mention kind of watching 2 and 3 leading up to it, and they kind of actually run together a little bit since I watched both in a row. But these movies, man, Pixar. I mean, they just follow that same formula that Pixar has always done so well. Which is take, how can I best put it? It's the rule that Pixar, a while ago, one of their storytellers on Twitter did this thread that's kind of, and when I was doing research for the episode, I came across this, but it's basically the rules of storytelling that Pixar follows. There's 22 of them, and they're kind of interesting because they kind of follow this format for all of their films, and it kind of shows why the Pixar storytelling works so well, because these films go through writes and rewrites and rewrites, and they go through it with a fine-tooth comb in the writing process for every one of these films. Excess story beats that aren't relevant to the central story are always very carefully scrutinized. But like rule 14 is, why must you tell this story? Like, what is that burning belief that this specific story feeds off of, and how does this specific story have a message for the world? A perfect example is like an Up. It is about a man dealing with loss and how you handle that, and that's obviously a pretty hefty issue. But Toy Story 4, and Aaron, you can tell me if you disagree, I think is the story of Woody facing that, dealing with the fact that he can no longer rely on the his old identity forever. He can't keep hanging on to what he was when he was Andy's toy, and he has to be able to embrace his new friends and his new role, while ideally not really changing who he is at his core, but he was letting in his past keep him back from his friends. That would be sort of the crux of the story that I would say that they're trying to tell in the message. And I think they do it reasonably well, but there are a couple holes along the way. I don't know. You tell me. What are you thinking?
Well, they're aiming for two different audiences, which Disney does so well, and especially their Pixar movies. They're aiming for that younger audience with kind of the fun and the bright colors and the, you know, the humor that they inject into these movies. But then there's always what they're aiming at for the adults is kind of more the deeper undertones of what you can get out of the story. And I think for someone like me, you know, who kind of grew up with these movies, and now you still have to find something relevant in this movie so many years later. And Woody is a great character to do that through, because he was like the star toy. And even the first movie kind of dealt with this a little bit, but this movie really gets to the point where he's kind of realizing that, you know, without finding a nicer way to say it, he's a bit of a has-been. And he's got to embrace that he's not going to be that central toy. I mean, if you really think about it, his owner, who was Bonnie, is that the name of the little girl?
Yep.
Bonnie has literally chosen a trash toy over Woody at this point. Like, he's not the premier toy. She's tossing him aside and, you know, sleeping in the bed with Forky.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, Woody's realizing, okay, I'm no longer the star. I have to embrace a new role. And by the end of the movie, he realizes that he may not even have a role in this girl's life anymore.
Well, and I think he still thinks of himself as like Bonnie's happiness depends on him. He's claiming that responsibility in a way that it isn't his anymore. And that's a tough thing in life. Like, that's empty nester syndrome. That's like your kids growing up and they don't need you anymore. Like, that's some pretty dark but real life stuff that you deal with.
Oh, definitely. And that's, I think, why there's probably, you know, you're sitting in that movie and you as an adult are getting completely different things out of it than the kid that's sitting next to you, who's laughing at all the Key and Peele jokes. And, you know, I'm just sitting there thinking, oh man, I can really relate with Woody right now. And like, you know, how he feels like maybe he's not, you know, he's kind of past his prime, and, you know, what is his, you know, what's his purpose now, and all of that stuff. So.
Yeah, they just do such a great job, and they, and it's that division between the two. But I also don't want to discount what Pixar has done here is they're by those quote unquote more adult themes or those more, I guess, hefty storytelling elements in the background. I think that's a really, really good way to plant those seeds, because kids are smart, and I think that they can kind of understand that to a certain degree, that they can kind of begin to understand some of those messages, even if maybe a little subconsciously. And I think that's really important for kids entertainment, because that's the difference. I know I was kind of joking about trolls at the beginning of this movie, but like, there's a lot of just really crappy animated kids movies that have come out in the last few years. And that's one thing I've always admired Pixar for, their really unique ability to tell that layered story.
To be fair, my kids love Trolls, but, you know, it's, I find I'm a bit snobby when it comes to animation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can sit down and watch Trolls once with my kids and laugh at the jokes and listen to the music and kind of get some enjoyment out of it. But that's not going to be a rewatchable movie for me very much. Whereas these Disney and Pixar movies are ones that I think, because of the depth of the story, you do have that rewatchability and you can kind of revisit them. You know, even when a new movie comes out, you're like, okay, Toy Story 4 came out. Now I want to watch the first three so I can remember a little bit more about this story and how it's developed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I will have a link to the Tribune article that I pulled up, because they had some interesting things about the film. Specifically, I want to dig into Tom Hanks as Woody. He just... There's something about Tom Hanks' voice that, like, the character wouldn't work if it weren't him. You wouldn't really get the gravitas of some of the concepts that they're trying to deal with without Tom Hanks. You can hear also Tim Allen again, great. Which, and that's the other thing. Getting to Buzz maybe a little bit. Tim Allen, there's a little bit more dimension to his character because Buzz still kind of deals with his delusions, I guess, in the way he sees the world. So simplistically, but so sweetly, in that he has his kind of moment to go after Woody because he needs to learn to listen to his inner voice, which again introduces the idea of a conscience to a kid watching who may not really understand what is that anyway? What does that mean to listen to your inner voice? And I just love the random button pushing and just listening to his actual, mechanical toy voice.
Kept telling him exactly what he needed to do next, just coincidentally.
To a point, the point that got kind of comedic.
Oh yeah, and I think that was that was one of the funnier gags that they kept going back to that actually worked really well, I thought. They definitely sideline Buzz a little bit in this movie.
Yeah.
More than I expected, because, you know, watching these movies, you kind of see the two stars as Woody and Buzz, and they're always kind of the two premier. I mean, you go to Toy Story Land; those are the two big statues.
Yeah.
And some of these other characters they've started to add over the years, and you've gotten used to seeing, you know, Mr. Potato Head and Rex, and even Jesse as a newer character with the second movie. But Bo Peep wasn't really ever one of those characters, not even a secondary. I'd say she was always even more so a background character. And then they brought her very front and center in this movie, which meant other characters were going to have to take a little bit of a back seat.
Yeah.
And I thought it was an interesting choice.
Well, all the characters by the second and third act of the film do take a back seat because it's her, it's the, you know, it's Duke Kaboom and Ducky and Bunny. Like the new cast really kind of overshadows the old cast in some ways.
Yeah, and the new characters they introduced were all great. I thought Ducky and Bunny were hilarious. Bo Peep was a really, you know, they obviously added a ton of dimension to her character from what we had previously seen. And then I forget the name of the little officer that was kind of on her shoulder.
Oh, yeah. I forget too, but yeah, but she was pretty cute.
That character was funny, yeah.
My favorite moment, and these weren't even really characters in the movie, was the soldier, like the G.I. Joe type army guys, and the last one who tries to high-five him. And he's
Combat
just...
Carl. And they got Carl Weathers to do that voice.
Wait, really?
Yeah, so that was literally Combat Carl, and it was Carl Weathers, who's going to be in The Mandalorian. But they, you know, I did exactly. They had that third one that always would go for the high-five and never, you know, always got left hanging, which was hilarious that they stuck to that. And I would say for any criticism I would have of this movie, would have nothing to do with the humor. The humor was spot on throughout. I found myself laughing throughout the entire movie. I don't think there was any joke that missed for me. I thought it was hilarious.
Specifically, probably the best moment for Key and Peele. I know I have to keep Ducky, Bunny, Key and Peele, you know, interchangeable. It's Key and Peele, but in toy form. Was them like narrating the various alternative ways that they could just assault the old lady at the antique shop.
The plush rush.
The plush rush, yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, and then Duke Kaboom, which is Reeves?
Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, who is the hot topic now, right now.
Right,
he's
in every movie now. What is happening?
Yeah, I mean, how did he found himself into a Toy Story movie? You know, that's crazy. He's come a long way since The Matrix.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the hot stuff right now. So, and he did a great job in this movie. His character was hilarious. And, you know, you can kind of recognize that voice, that, you know, iconic Keanu Reeves voice throughout. So, but I guess one of my criticisms would be, I think because of all these awesome new characters, it really did sideline these classic characters. I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't get a little bit more time with some of the more classic characters.
Yeah, and I think the movie is pretty quickly paced and the story carries along. I think it's that Pixar, they were just really trimming it down to what the story is, and so we lost some development and some time with the favorites in order to do that, which I think worked. But really, because it was the movie, it's only I remember walking out of the movie thinking, wow, that wasn't that long, because I'm so used to going to 3-hour movies these days. but walking out of it, the sort of, I guess, central message at the very end, I just want to jump to the end here. Woody has for years been used to being, starting out as sort of the patriarch of the toys and the hotness, and discovering his past in Toy Story 2 and dealing with his child going off to college in Toy Story 3. That full arc is kind of complete. And I think what Toy Story 4 does so well is answer the question, what next? What now? And for Woody, that's the message that his true happiness, his true purpose, can now evolve beyond belonging to and being responsible for a child, and instead find his adventure as a lost toy alongside Bo Peep, and that's why he departs. I have a problem, though, with the end here.
And, okay.
And call me crazy, but I feel like they too quickly dismiss his friendship with Buzz and the other toys and the relationship that he's had over the years with them for his joining the lost toys and Bo Peep and going off on his adventure. In Toy Story 3, I think what made it so poignant, why, you know, everyone was crying in the theater when they were watching it, was this really beautiful moment where Andy releases his past, as in life you do, but gives his toys in the care of Bonnie at the very end of the movie, and trusting her to play with the toys to continue their purpose. And I feel like that moment's a little diminished by Woody departing all of his friends at the end. I was watching the movie and I was a little disappointed by that, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I think they kind of set up with that scene, that flashback scene that we got with Bo Peep, you know, getting boxed up and Woody coming out there, and then she's kind of like, hey, you could come with me if you want, and he could jump into the box with her. And they were really kind of establishing that him and Bo Peep had a closer relationship that was never really portrayed in the movies before. So I think that was the whole purpose of that flashback, was like, hey guys, we know we haven't established this before, but hey, they're really close, and he even almost left everyone for her once before. So that was a nice, I think they needed that scene to make the end of the movie work better. And by the end, he does decide that he's going to leave his friends to stay, I think mainly to stay with Bo Peep. And, you know, that was his boo, you know, it was a relationship decision. And I think he had, you know, kind of gotten to a point where he's grown past the need to be with his owner and now can start a relationship, you know, with his friend, kind of girlfriend, I guess you could say. So there was kind of that. He gets the girl in the end, you know.
I guess
that
so.
But I mean, and I agree though. I do think that, you know, it was kind of a weird and sudden thing because we hadn't been given a lot of history with those two characters, and more so with him and Buzz, that he was kind of like, you know, peace out, guys. I'm gonna stay with her.
Yeah, to infinity and beyond. See ya. Have a great time. Bye.
But I mean, I think this movie was interesting in that I enjoyed it. I really liked this movie. I had a good time. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. Did we need this movie? Probably not. If they never made this movie, I don't think I would have cared. The story seems a little bit forced. You know, it's kind of like, hey, let's make another one. I felt like the third movie could have been the end, and that would have been a little bit more satisfying.
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing, it's not necessarily a knock that we could have done without the movie, but it kind of gets that back to that, the movie has its own, going back to that Rule 14, the movie has its reason to exist, has its central theme, that is an important message that works well, but it didn't have to be a Toy Story film to do that, which I think is an interesting, that would be, I guess, the way I would parse that a little bit. But like, yeah. If you're asking me like the star rating, 4 out of 5, like it's really well done. Go see it. I'm sure you have if you're listening to this podcast. But Toy Story 4, another worthy entry into the Pixar storytelling. But I think I'm kind of like you, Aaron, and I know you've said this on the podcast before, but I trust Disney animation, both their Disney Studios and Pixar, and with their storytelling, and I don't think they need to rely on sequels. They've proven that over and over again, but maybe sometimes that's a little hard to resist. But man, at least they wait a while between them.
They make a lot of money. You know, Incredibles 2 made a ton of money. The Toy Story 3 made a ton of money. You know, so they know it's kind of that tried and true, because I prefer movies like Up and Coco and Inside Out, you know, these original stories, that those are the movies that really resonate with me more so than the Cars movies and the Incredibles movies and the Toy Story movies. But those movies don't make as much money as those three franchises. So there's that balancing act where they have to, you know, they want to have original storytelling, but at the same time, they want to print money, and Toy Story can print money. So,
yeah. Well, hey, guys, I want to take a brief second and announce this week's giveaway on the Mouse and Castle podcast. I have right here speaking of sporks, I have the fork from Galaxy's Edge. No, that's what I would do if I was terrible and stole it. No. people are stealing crap at Galaxy's Edge.
I had not heard about this until today. You sent me this link.
I know. I can't believe this didn't come across your desk. It was a bit of a trending story in the old Disney blogosphere last week, because all this crap from Galaxy's Edge was showing up on eBay. And I'm not talking about like puffer pigs for resale, but instead, this is the unofficial stuff. The maps.
The stuff that you get for free.
The map, I know, right? The maps, the menus, the silverware that you're definitely not supposed to take out of Galaxy's Edge was showing up on eBay.
Well, some of this stuff is like, it's iffy, you know? The morality or the ethics of this stuff is a little bit iffy when it comes to certain things. Like, for example, the coasters at Oga's Cantina, or the maps, things that are meant to be free, things that are disposable. If you want to grab a handful of that stuff and try to sell it on eBay, that is questionable ethics. You know, sure, it's free, but was it intended for you to take
20 of them, 30 of them?
No, it wasn't intended for that. And all you're doing is you're making it so some other guy who's actually looking for a map because he doesn't know how to get around can't get a map. And they're having to they're having to print more maps, and you know that costs money too. So it's just affecting the bottom line and how much we pay for in tickets and all of that. So, but then there's the other things that are not questionable at all, like the actual silverware from Docking Bay 7 that is metal, you know, themed sporks. Those are not meant to be taken, that people are trying to sell on eBay now for apparently $190. Really, the people are straight up stealing stuff. That's not even questionable. That's stealing. Like, people are taking the cards that you get on the Smuggler's Run ride.
They're getting in character. They're smuggling. They're just hardcore Disney bounty. No.
Yeah, there's a difference between a smuggler and a pirate. These people are pirates. I don't know. It's just, to me, it just ruins the fun for everybody. And you know, I'm seeing stuff like, you know, people are going in and buying up all the Kyber crystals, you know, and selling those on eBay too. And it's like, that's not the intention here. This is like, that's not the community spirit that you should have, you know, as a Star Wars fan or as a Disney fan. You know, you shouldn't go and buy all, you know, 20 yellow Kyber crystals so you can sell them on eBay for $50 each. You know, buy the one you want for your lightsaber and then let everybody else have some.
I know. Those coasters are going for $10 a pop, by the way.
Wow. I mean, I grabbed a coaster. I went to Oga's. I got a drink. They put it on a coaster. They're going to throw that coaster out anyways. And I grabbed the coaster and took it with me. I took one coaster.
And is it, what's your eBay account? How do I, we,
yeah.
No.
Don't, yeah.
Well, though, people are taking those poster cards, for the little nice cards from the Smuggler's Run attraction, and they're selling them for $20 a piece online.
I feel like that kind of stuff, couldn't you get in trouble? Like, can't they press charge? Not that Disney ever would, but you're literally stealing you know, things from their ride.
You made a great point in Aaron's hot take segment of this week's Mouse and Castle newsletter, available at bit.ly/mouseandcastle. But your point was, this kind of ruins it because now they're just going to give cheap disposable silverware and we won't get the cool in-universe sporks.
Yeah, they've already you know, started switching over to just regular plastic silverware because people were stealing the cool stuff. So it's already taking you out of universe. It's, you know, people that haven't gotten to go yet.
Yeah.
I mean, when we went to Docking Bay 7, I hadn't even seen the sporks, so they might have already been taking them out of circulation at that point because I never even saw one.
Yeah, no, that's true. Disney has not commented on these said smugglers. However, according to Deadline, park employees have been observed taking additional steps to curtail the swiping of these freebies, such as very rapidly collecting the menus when you're done with your order. I've got that for you. Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Yes, we'll have the Ronto wrap, and please hand that back to me right now. Yeah. Sick the first order troopers on them and make it stop. Hey, we have updates on the Little Mermaid live action coming out stat. Hey, this is pretty much everything you need to know. We haven't really talked about this on the podcast yet. Again, it's remake a palooza at Disney. We had both Dumbo and Aladdin and Lion King's coming up this year alone. But we have the remake of The Little Mermaid, of course, the 1989 classic. Now, who's in it? Well, there was an update from Variety, which is a pretty reliable source. It's going to be Melissa McCarthy. She's in talks, not confirmed yet, to join the reboot as Ursula, the Sea Witch. Which would be an interesting fit, because I could see it. What have I seen Melissa McCarthy in? I haven't really seen many of, I know of her movies, The Bridesmaids, Ghostbusters of the World. I feel like I saw her in something, but to me it seems like a pretty good fit. So that's the latest rumor. We also have, according to Deadline, Jacob Tremblay in talks to play. Why did I just blank on the little fish? The flounder. Flounder. Oh my gosh. Disney gods, don't strike me down. And then the star of one of the stars of Crazy Rich Asians, and she's actually really funny in it. I have seen that movie. Awkwafina voicing Scuttle, possibly. Again, none of this is confirmed from Disney, but it seems like the cast is shaping up. Heavy in the rumor mill is Zendaya as Ariel, mostly because she had like her hair dyed red recently, so therefore she must be playing Ariel. I mean, that's not exactly the most reliable sourcing on it. I mean, I guess I think she was asked about it in an interview, and she was like, sure, I'd love to play it, but that's like what all actors do. Remember when The Force Awakens was coming out, and like every actor ever was being asked, would you like to be in Star Wars? And the answer was always, why, absolutely. And then, of course, there'd be a bunch of articles and blogs about so-and-so willing to be in the Star Wars movie. Headline. But so what are you thinking of the cast so far? If this is confirmed, Aaron, what's your general thoughts on the rumored cast? And then also hit me on where you are with The Little Mermaid as a remake. Because I know in the case of Aladdin, well, and kind of with Toy Story 4, you're pretty heavy on the they need a reason to exist, not just let's remake it.
Yeah, I mean, Little Mermaid was kind of the original Disney movie that I remember as a kid. And it probably holds a place for me the same as Little Mermaid. I mean, the same as Aladdin would, where it's kind of like, oh, do we really need to make this movie? I really ended up liking Aladdin. The casting choices, I mean, I haven't been following any of this stuff because at this point, like you said, it's kind of all still very much rumors. And I try not to get too hung up on if I like a casting choice or not until it's actually a real casting choice. And I don't know much about the names that you just listed off, other than Melissa McCarthy, which I feel like is a little comedic to go for Ursula. Ursula was always a very intimidating, not that she wasn't comedic, but yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting choice if that's ultimately where they go.
Well, and Little Mermaid's one of those I never saw growing up and saw more recently for the first time. In fact, at the Dallas Symphony, me and my girlfriend Savannah went and saw like the live orchestra, but with the movie broadcast. It was a really fun way to watch the movie for the first time. I'd heard all the songs growing up, of course, but I'd never seen it all the way. And it is, it's like Ursula's a pretty dark character, although she has a lot of sort of like really goofy presentation to cover up very dark, sell your soul, you know, subject matter. I wish Disney did a lot back in the day, like very kind of dark story elements that are coated over with kind of absurdist or funny or goofy characters that are nonetheless kind of terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of has this way about her that's very almost like sultry type of a character, kind of like this kind of deeper, smooth voice. And I don't really associate those things with Melissa McCarthy.
That's true. She does. They play on her jealousy overtly of The Little Mermaid's, if Ariel's voice and beauty. And I mean, I obviously particularly voice. So it'd be interesting to see how they play that element of it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. But we'll try. I'm sure they'll, with these kinds of things, they have the official cast announcements pretty soon. It'll be on the cover of Entertainment Monthly here soon.
Yeah, I'll save my like hardcore reactions to when they actually announce some of these people, and it's out of the rumor.
Yeah, for sure.
Phase.
For sure. Well, guys, that is going to wrap up yet another episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast. Hey, I mentioned it just a moment ago, but if you have not, you should definitely subscribe to our newsletter. You can do so right there on our website, mouseandcastle.com. We have a newsletter button right there. Or if you remember the URL right here, it's just bit.ly/mouseandcastle. Make sure you put that E on mouse, because I know I've made that mistake a few times because I'm a dummy. So Mouse and Castle, bit.ly/mouseandcastle. Join our Instagram following, which we are posting more and more. Aaron, I've seen you're posting more there. I've been posting a bunch of photos from our recent Disneyland trip. We've got an upcoming trip, of course, for the Wine and Dine at Disney World. And Aaron, I'm working on a plan to go in September for a day. Shh.
Okay.
But I'm working now that I'm in driving distance of a park. I'm like six hours away now. We're working.
6 hours is driving distance,
right? Yes. Jeez. Of course, it's an easy. Yeah, it's just a little.
This is coming from a kid that lived in Texas. That's why you.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's basically distance. I go there for lunch and come back. It's because I used to live in Texas.
We have such a library because of all the different trips that we've both taken to the Disney parks over the past few years. Like we have such a library of pictures that we've been kind of posting stuff on Instagram from our history of trips.
It's nice to have a place that we can kind of chronicle what we love about Disney. And that's really just what the Instagram's become. So follow it at Mouse and Castle on Instagram. Of course, also on Twitter at Mouse and Castle. And the links for everything, including what we talked about in today's episode, episode 21, will be available at mouseandcastlepodcast.com. Hey, you can also hit our email, mouseandcastle@gmail.com, and stay in touch with us that way as well. We will be back again. We're working on the details at the moment. So, you know, far be it for me to announce things that aren't done yet. But, hey, that's what I'm doing. This is a way I'm making it true by talking about it here. Working on doing a fun crossover episode with the Coffee with Kenobi podcast. Dan Zare, good friend of mine and really cool Star Wars guy who's had some pretty cool in-depth experiences at Galaxy's Edge. And we're working on a crossover episode with them that'll be coming out in the near future. So stay tuned for that here. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't. Share it with one of your Disney pals if you have not. The Mouse and Castle podcast. And we'll be back soon. Until next time, remember, the magic lives no matter what. Or I should say, no matter who is your child. It was a good line if I just delivered it right. I was just... It's always like almost there.
Thanks to our bad connection, I didn't even hear your line.
Oh, so. Really? Oh, gosh.
Doesn't matter.